for them.
Want the world to get better, you do the work between the elections, and during the election, you make the best choice, and then you get your ass back to work. You, like me...
I can't stand listening to my own voice.
Spend a lot of our time whining online, that's our jobs, but the difference between you and me is that I don't think I'm special for my abstemiousness from the process that other people have lived and died and bled for, trying to build a world comfortable enough that we could be dipshits in a computer chair.
I'm glad you all like that stuff, you know? Maybe I still talk like that, who knows? I try to keep my nose out of drama unless I'm directly implicated in it, and I keep hearing people sort of like foretelling, you know, like the church bell tolls. What's happening here? What's going on?
So I've done a lot of introspection over the last couple of days, because I've been accused of having a real bad case of the VDS.
What did I do?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I think what I actually have is VFDS. I've got Vosh fan base derangement syndrome, which I've got that too. That's a whole different ball of wax, you know what I mean? Because, you know, you and I haven't talked in like 2 years or something, and every show I do, there are still people reminding me that you handed me my ass 2 years ago, Vosh. You grabbed my ass, put it on a silver platter, flipped it around, and handed it right to me. 2 years later.
Look, the people in my audience really like Biden, okay? It's they're fanboy. It's not even for me, okay? They're just running around proselytizing.
Didn't even give you a reach around, Paul. What's up, man? How it goes, though. How it goes.
I think it boils down to the same old song and dance, honestly. To set aside the jokes. I think it's the vote blue no matter who thing. I think it's the kind of making...
Chad, we're watching this. The reason I'm taking a look at this is because... I have adopted significantly less electorally, like, democratic positions over the past year and a half. And because this was like 2-3 years ago, this was in anticipation, assuming Biden was running again against Trump in 2024. And now I don't really favor Gavin Newsom, hypothetically, as a primary candidate against a theoretical J.D. Vance. It's like a theoretical thing. So I'm revisiting the position. Just say you did a 180 on your position. Hello, Mossad agent. Well, that's what we're looking at this for, to see if I did a 180. Because to my memory, I didn't. To my memory, I'm still making a harm reduction argument, where in the past, I think that the world would be better if Biden had won. I guess I still do, right? But now, I don't know if the world would be better if we got a do-nothing Dem in rather than a Republican.
Apologies for Biden thing. I think it's that kind of angle, I think, is probably our sharpest disagreement.
Well, the real base position is not making apologies for his bad behavior, but then arguing you have to vote for him anyway, right? That's the real, like, electoralism pilled, there is no way out, this is what we live with attitude to take towards the situation.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I don't like the idea of us just eternally settling for a shitty neoconservative and neoliberal clothing. I don't like that. I don't think that gets us anywhere nice. I think it might stave off some of the worst shit for a couple more years, but
how can you say that and also say Trump should have won in 2020? Well, there's a difference between the position that you can fairly make with hindsight and the position you can fairly make without hindsight, right? Like, when I thought that it was better for Biden to have won in 2020, I could not have known, and I stand by this, I really do not think that I could have known how bad Biden would have been at opposing the Republican Party, particularly with Garland refusing to do anything about Trump, even though Trump openly committed treason and just nothing happened, right? If I had known that Biden would just use those 4 years to, like, dick around and sit in his hand while Trump built up power and built up the Heritage Foundation movement, I probably would have advocated for Trump back in 2020, though I think I would have had a really tough time making that case at the time.
I think we end up in the same toilet. No.
I stand by the logic. Fundamentally, nothing has really changed. If there are only two possible options, you have to go with the better of the two. Obviously, like, this was right after October 7th. So it was after things were bad, but before I knew that Biden would just rather die than criticize Israel, you know? Rhetorically speaking, I'm not exactly thrilled to be doing anything that even sounds like defending Biden right now because of what he's doing with regards to the genocide and in Palestine. Right. So this isn't exactly like a period of time during which I'm going to go out there and proselytize and wave banners around and, you know, shoot t-shirt cannons with Biden's face on it into the crowd. Not the time for that. I got rid of my Biden mug recently, the dark Brandon mug. more probably going to focus on tearing down the GOP, you know, but ultimately, like,
isn't it time now more than ever to do that, though? I mean, Biden's numbers are tanking, right?
He's
pulled up even and is a lot of polls is losing to Trump. He's losing horribly to generic Democrat, which is like one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my lifetime.
The polling's not good. I don't think it's as bad as a lot of people think it is, because everyone who is going to vote for Trump thinks positively of him. At least most do. Whereas there are lots of people who don't very much like this Biden who still vote.
This is an unusual election for the reason that both of these guys are a known quantity, right?
And both like rather unpopular.
Had a helping of both of these dudes as president. So this is an unusual election because we've not been in a situation where we have a choice between real. I mean, America has.
This is worth mentioning. TJ said recently they didn't expect Trump to be as bad as he's been, and they were kind of wrong to some extent. Well, I'm not really doing this to like dunk on Paul's ego or TJ or anything in retrospect. I guess I'm mostly just curious how much I mean, I can't see the future. I'm sure I said stuff here that ended up being wrong. You know, I wouldn't even say that necessarily means that it aged badly, I guess. If the thought process ages badly, I think that's different to the prediction aging badly, if that makes any sense. Like, if you have a good reason to believe a thing that ended up not happening, that's different than it turns out you had a bad reason to believe that thing in the first place. I think I had good reason to believe that Biden and Merrick Garland would in some sense punish Trump after 2020, but here we are, you know, it's like, pardon me for believing in law. Your thought process was vote blue no matter who? No, the vote blue no matter who thing was a rhetorical line, but it was always to supplement another position, that of harm reduction, right? The belief was in harm reduction. The idea that it would have been better if Biden had won in 2024, or as it turns out, Kamala Harris, because Biden dropped out after the fucking debate. But the harm reduction argument remains, I guess, the perspective from which I'm seeing things.
But like in my lifetime, never had a situation where it's like, hey, do you want this guy who was president or this guy who was just president? It's like, which one do you want a second helping of? And the fact that so many Americans are just like, hey, I'll take a second helping of Trump, please. Seems pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no getting over just the sheer lack of intelligence of your average voter. I mean, that's definitely sort of an ongoing problem we have to deal with. I mean, in materially speaking, like obviously Biden's presidency has been a lot better than Trump's. The big
I cannot stand listening to myself speak. Holy shit.
Stickler in that has been this business with the genocide of the Palestinian people that he aids and abets, which, I mean, there's no defending that. Obviously, Trump would have done the same thing. Trump has been even more loud in the...
There's been more sticklers, right, than just Palestine.
Well, that's definitely the main one. But apart from that, his presidency has definitely been better than I expected it to be. Certainly not perfect, but, you know, from what you get with neoliberal candidates, he's definitely exceeded in some critical areas, mostly with regards to union stuff. I mean, he was doing so well with that, and then we have this.
Yeah, I mean, I did get excited with his NLRB, you know, kind of protecting unions in a way that we haven't had since the 80s. Preventing.
God, Bosh, no offense. Why do you sound so pretentious when talking to other people? Because over the past couple of years, I've gotten a lot less pretentious. That's why. Over the past couple of years, I've shifted out of the debate space, and as a consequence, I'm no longer judging, like, my criteria for sounding good is, like, intellectually dominating my opponent. My criteria for sounding good is now more, like, it doesn't feel good and natural to talk this way. When was this from? This was from like 2.5 years ago, I think. But this was right towards the end of what I would consider like me shifting my. And from my perspective, this is like my personal, like where I define the era, I guess. For me, it was my Barcelona trip. I came back from Barcelona. That was after this. I came back from Barcelona and I was like, wow, there are some elements of my job that I do not enjoy. I'm going to shift on that, you know? And I think to me, at least, that was the. That was where I think I, you know, shifted my perspective a little bit. The promised land, Barcelona is a lovely city. Lovely, lovely city. And they make French fries better than us. Do you want to talk to TJ again at some point? I don't really want to talk to anyone ever. I need to rediscover whatever part of me it is that makes me want to talk to people. But I like my memories of engaging with other people on stream are almost entirely negative, even with people that I like. Just the block of perspectives and chat responses and the engagements and so on that it represents to me, mostly I associate it with negativity. But we are going to ramp up for the primaries. We're probably going to have some people on. Maybe we'll talk to Rokana again. Who knows? Hardest job in the world. Hardest job in the world.
Companies from union busting before the union is even ratified. I think that that's a huge deal. I gave him props for that, for sure. But outside of that, I find very little to crow about when it comes to the Biden presidency. You want to list off some of the wonderful things Biden has done?
I mean, he's done a good number of good things, mostly because there are good things that are just sensible governance. But it's really just a matter of whether or not he's done better than Trump, which I think is pretty easy to make the case for. Considering, okay, for real, though, how many jobs involve watching yourself argue with someone else 3 years ago? You people can't give me the hardest job in the world bullshit now, because I know a lot of you are trans, and forcing you to watch a video recording of yourself arguing for 3 hours from 3 years ago would probably make most of you fucking punch your ticket early, okay? I don't need to get this from you people. I know this would be an element of the job that you would be distinctly bad at.
Well,
I'm sorry?
It's a low bar as well.
Yeah, it could be all the way down in hell. The math doesn't change. But yeah, I mean, he's a competent politician, right? In the sense that he actually cares about governing in a way that Trump and the Republicans don't. So a lot of the stuff that he does that's good is going to be like very baseline stuff. Like, you know, I disagree with this now. Not like keeping the country funded and not gutting the administrative state. Like really, really basic stuff like that. But the bar keeps going lower.
I disagree with this now, because now my perspective is like, Trump does this in a way that's really open and obvious, but Biden and Obama and Clinton all participated in the process of the neoliberalization and financialization of the economy, which is the underlying rot. Like the rot that we're experiencing right now may superficially seem like, well, everything's falling apart because Trump and the Republicans, and they just break things and break the law. But that's actually not what's undermining everything. What's undermining everything is the siphoning of wealth, right? So I think I would disagree on that. I think that to be interested in governance now means that on some level you have to address and care about that. And obviously Biden didn't.
Project, what is it? Project 2025, the Republicans just openly admitting they plan on like gutting the democracy from the administrative state once they get the chance to. In the face of stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's not new, though. I mean, they've been talking about that since I was a boy.
That's like their 900-page manifesto of like, hey, everything you know.
Yeah, that's the don't show up to the administrative state tomorrow. You've been cool. Don't show up manifesto that they wrote. Yeah, I mean, they've always threatened to do stuff like this, bitched about the administrative state. Seems like they've been a lot more aggressive about it lately. But no sense in giving them the opportunity to prove to us whether or not they mean it this time.
I did have kind of a hypothetical question I wanted to ask you. Hmm? I don't know, maybe it's a little bit out there, but... maybe it's not too crazy, because we've seen some polls where RFK Jr. is polling at like 22% in one poll. Most polls it's like 10, 12%. So obviously you can be at that.
He was still on the Democratic ticket at this point, right? Yeah. I think at this point, RFK Jr. was still running as a Democrat in the presidential primary.
20% and still not get a single electoral college vote.
Right.
But I wondered if there was a point where his candidacy became like he had an actual path. Would you then have to look at this three-way race and pick the lesser of three evils, or are you still just automatically for Biden?
Well, I mean, if RFK Jr. was better than Biden, he's not. I mean, he's terrible.
I think it's arguable, because I mean, I think RFK Jr. is a crazy lunatic, anti-vaxxer, just as pro-Israel as the rest of them. So he's got a lot of, you know, severe issues. But there's also some stuff that I mean, he's like pretty based on. So I don't know. I'd have to kind of
I don't remember what RFK Jr. was pretending to believe back then, because he's such an open, aggressive liar, right? I think that back at this time, like if you looked into him, he was still really, really bad. But I think that a lot of his talking points were a lot more Democrat aligned. And of course, that shifted completely. Keep in mind that at a certain point, he literally just like he said he will switch Republican if he's promised a cabinet seat, you know, like he told the Republican Party that.
Get out.
Well, like what could he, what is he better on than Biden?
Let me just pull up his page, I guess.
Like he says stuff like that, but a lot of the stuff that he said like at rallies or when talking to people publicly has wildly differed from his
vaccine policy is going to be about the same as Trump's or worse.
You could say the same about Biden too.
They ended up being one of the same, because he ended up being their CDC guy.
Biden ran on a $15 minimum wage. Biden ran on a bunch of, ending the border crisis. Those I think there's a talking points of
pretty critical difference where like there's lots of like every politician will say they'll do things.
RFK Jr. is not really important. Let's just take him out of it. Let's just say there's a third party person that rises to the level where they could win. Would it then be lesser of three evils?
That's... Yeah, if they had a shot at winning, I suppose. I mean, the problem is because we don't have ranked choice voting, so it's insanely risky, even if there was a really, really good shot of trying to push a third-party candidate, because obviously if the third-party candidate's good enough to me that I would consider voting for them, they'd have to be a left-leaning, which means they'd siphon more votes from the Dems. I feel like in this system, it's almost impossible to get an outcome like that. But I guess hypothetically, if the math worked out, that would probably be preferable to just like touting the two-party thing.
Don't you feel like there's like a certain risk in creating a standard for Democrats no higher than just like be better than the opposition? Like long term, don't you think that produces worse and worse candidates and hurts the party in the long run?
Well, this is the core, I think, of where I shifted, or maybe I've shifted. I think I have shifted my perspective. So I want to see where this problem is, that it really hasn't produced worse and worse candidates. We've been a two-party system for centuries, effectively, with very minor exceptions. And the trends that have dictated like better or worse governorship don't seem to be like, it doesn't seem to be just like a downward plummet. I don't actually think that like, I don't think the politicians are that motivated by the prospect of winning. Like, non-participation doesn't seem to motivate Democrats in the ways that we want it to. If left-leaning people indicate that we're not reliable voters, they'll just move to the right to pick up more moderate voters, which is historically what they've done. When they feel like they don't have any chance of capturing the more active populist left-wing crowd, they're like, oh, okay, well, we'll never please those guys. When, to be fair, we are pretty unpleasable. So we're going to try and, like, pull over the centrist voters, the moderate voters. So you get, like...
That part is true, but...
Clinton, for example, right, where after Reagan and Bush Senior, they're like, okay, well, you know, the anti-war advocacy movement has basically died down. The boomers are all in like middle management corporate jobs. There isn't an active, engaged left to appeal to. The Cold War is like ending, so there's not even that. So like, who do we appeal to win? And Clinton was like, we'll just do Reagan's economic policies, but you know, we'll smile about it and we'll be like slightly less homophobic and racist. And that works.
There's a ton of like very. Like there are things where the American people are not lockstep with the American left, but like there's a lot of very populist leftist economic policies that poll well, that Bernie Sanders was taking advantage of during his campaigns to tremendous effect.
This is okay. This is really complicated. I think so. There are multiple levels to this. Okay, I do think the Dems are not that motivated by winning. I think that the Republicans are. The Dems seem to be unwilling to make significant policy concessions to the benefit of their people who might otherwise join their tent, and Republicans are. And the reason for that, in my opinion, it's kind of unfalsifiable, but I think there's evidence to the point. The reason for that is because when Republicans make concessions to their base, they do it in a way that makes their donors happy too. Like, you could have insane... radical like evangelicals or Tea Party types or fascists or whatever. Republicans conceding to those groups on social or even on economic issues does not really get in the way of their donors' policies. The corporatists and the oligarchs that work with Republicans right now are both more or less on board with what's happening. Hell, the corporatists aren't even that upset about Trump's massive tariff strategy because it's mostly been used as this mob boss strat to extol favor from companies and from corporations in order to, you know, rescind the effects of the tariffs on them specifically. So it's the Democrats, on the other hand, it is very, very obvious what the Democrats kowtowing to the left would look like in the long run. And it would look like heavier regulations, higher taxes. Look at what's going on with Mamdani right now, right? They fought tooth and nail to keep Mamdani out of the mayorship. What is he doing now, like a month and a half after getting it? He's trying to raise taxes on the wealthy, as he said he would, right? As he said he would. So he's trying to push for a wealth tax from Albany. Obviously, wealthy people don't like that. They never have. That's the big shift, you know? So Republicans want to win no matter what, because them winning usually doesn't come at the cost of what their donors are okay with. Democrats, however, have the sort of hamstring effect of their voters and their donors wanting different things, mutually opposed things, right? So that's point number one. Point number two is that, generally speaking, I do think that Democrats will try to appeal to right-wing voters if they think they can't win the votes of the left. The problem, I guess, for me is that we're running out the clock. I know that, I mean, we just did a whole thing on like evangelical Christians and like they think the world is ending. I don't think the world is ending, but I think that we're running out the clock on our time to fix certain problems. My worry is that if we get another do-nothing Democrat who immediately capitulates to the right, fails to address any of the underlying issues, does nothing about the Republican Party, the traitors and the seditionists who are undermining this country's constitution, does nothing about the accumulation of wealth in the hands of the 1% or whatever, if we get another do-nothing Democrat who like lets their voters down, I feel like we are contributing to a culture of political nihilism, where people become apathetic and they think there's no chance at anything ever getting better again. You know what I'm talking about? And that's my worry. I feel like we're running out the clock here because very soon these problems are going to be properly unfixable. I do think we have a window here where something can be done, where like a really good unifying candidate like FDR could get in the White House, get a good majority in Congress, and like build America out and not permanently fix everything, you know? I'm not saying that an FDR-style candidate would, like, immediately address all these problems and they'd be addressed forever, they'd be fine. But I do think that they could potentially stop the rot and really set in motion, like, long-term changes. Keep in mind, FDR wasn't just popular during his presidency. FDR was so popular, and the stuff that he did was so popular, that it set the baseline for decades afterwards. The Republican Party is still trying to unwind the entitlements that he built. Social Security, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, the New Deal road infrastructure. There's a whole bunch of shit that he set in motion that became the standard for an effective government. And they've been unwinding it for a long time, and they've been succeeding, but it does show how long the shadow he's cast has been, you know? There's a reason he was that popular. There's a reason he was that effective. I'm hoping we get a candidate like that, you know? And I guess the threat of disillusioning people with a candidate like Gavin Newsom is so significant because it might keep that candidate from emerging for like over a decade. And that at that point, it might be too late. And I really, really worry about us becoming like Russia. We become a country that has like a nominal democracy. But in reality, the truth is like, nobody really cares, and everyone's so poor and disaffected, they're basically just looking for a strong man that fulfills their personal grievances. You know, it's people just end up like beefing over scraps. You lose the ability to build like a real unifying candidacy. Maybe it is too late, at which point none of this really matters, I guess, except for very short-term harm reduction. But in the long term, the big threats, climate change, the Republican Party, and wealth inequality, they're still there, you know? Somebody has to do something about them. Also worth pointing out that right now, the only two politicians that have put any real fuss forward about addressing the income gap are AOC and Ro Khanna. They're the only ones meaningfully, with real clout, with real cultural power, willing to sign on to the idea of a wealth tax. And a wealth tax is our only hope, I feel, for a lot of stuff going forward. I don't think they're going to run together. I don't know.
So I think there is ways to bring people in, but it seems to involve, you know, doing more actual stuff for people instead of just being like, hey, here's a little few tokenistic gestures, competent governance, but no real change,
TJ,
except for very incrementally.
In the state you and I have lived in for a long time, Louisiana, we don't live there anymore. I mean, we normally have an open sort of party thing. So like basically if you don't get 50%, then we go from a primary, then we go to an actual election. I was actually avoided this year because Jeff Landry.
Wouldn't even a moderate Democrat be better for climate change? Biden also, no, because now you get back to the other problem, which is the Republican Party. If you get a moderate Democrat, they will lose to the next Republican, and the Republican will just undo everything they did. Like Biden was somewhat better on sustainable energy than, you know, than Trump. I he wasn't nearly as much so as I wanted, but Biden didn't really do anything to institutionally fight against the power, the prominence, and the influence of oil and gas, right? Still opened up new fracking permits, still allowed, like, we don't just need, like, you know, some incremental push by 2050 or whatever. Like, we need, right now, their grip to be pulled off of the American the American economy. They need to be ripped away from it, you know? Real power, real effort. By your logic, we're in the end game, but almost no one's acting that way? Yes, I do think that. That is what is currently informing my thinking, I guess. I feel like the big three, which is anti-democracy or maybe democratic nihilism, climate change, and income inequality together are, like, we're very, 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 very near the end of the point that we can be at while still
having the potential to address it. And the debt crisis? Well, the debt crisis is fueled by the income inequality. If we tax wealthy people a regular, normal, fine amount, we could get it under control pretty much immediately. Well, okay, that's an overstatement. Not pretty much immediately. But we would be able to address it. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money out there.
A horrible conservative won the state easily. He got over 50% of the vote. And wasn't even competitive, because if you actually looked at the voter turnout, and the race was 29%. So, I mean, the Democratic Party in this state is a joke. They're not even really trying to run anyone credibly, when this is a state they probably actually could be competitive in. And there's a lot of states like that, but they're not competitive. There's like, that's a red state. That's a blue state.
This is true. Dems historically have been really, really, really bad at funding and supporting long shot candidates in red states, or even like pushing to normalize themselves culturally there. They've allowed purple states to turn into red states and blue states to turn into purple states.
State. And it's like almost like neither party even gives a shit or tries.
With that Louisiana governor you're talking about.
Well, the soon to be governor.
Well, yeah, the governor elect. He wants to withhold funds for New Orleans water infrastructure.
He does.
Until women who seek abortions are prosecuted.
Yep.
So basically holding the infrastructure of a city hostage.
Oh, it's far right.
Like GOP.
His far right social agenda is enacted against.
I watched his victory speech. Abortions. And the first thing that's mentioned is God. It's like, we're doing this for God. Then family and some other stuff comes later. So yeah, that's going to be the agenda. And New Orleans obviously is a horribly placed city. If you don't know, it's between Lake Pontchartrain and the Mississippi River, and it's basically a giant bowl. So if those, and the sewage and water problems, I mean, they have pumps, they have to pump water out of the city constantly. So withholding that infrastructure is going to make sure more people suffer and more people don't get adequate access to sanitation they need.
What if Biden...
The problem with oil and gas, and I don't know if Bosch knows that, we're not quite there yet as far as alternatives to completely replace it. We don't need to completely replace it, but we could replace like an overwhelming amount of the grid with solar if we just invested in it. America is a golden land of opportunity when it comes to engineering prowess, land use. We could do it if we wanted to. It's only because we've chosen not to, you know? Like right now, where we are with the development of the energy grid would be like if through subsidies and really, really, really aggressive policymaking, everyone in America was still riding on horseback and carriage into the 1960s. And people are like, well, you can't replace all that with cars. Cars are expensive and we don't even know how they work. Like, it's so difficult to imagine the world that we could be in right now if we put even a tiny bit of effort and money into developing like a solar grid, you know? You can't run the grid off mostly solar. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can't. Listen, it is literally like magical future tech. You're harvesting energy from nothing. We could easily do it. I don't care. People are like nuclear, whatever, nuclear too, okay? I don't care. There's no reason to beef here. Two bad bitches. You don't have to. We could absolutely do it. The only reason we don't is because the government is controlled by oil and gas. They have rescinded subsidies. They have made it more and more and more difficult. There are insane laws all around the country, federal and state, and sometimes even like municipal, that make it increasingly difficult to build solar and apply solar and to give money back to the grid. All the incentives you would have for the tech, they're trying to tear them apart. Why? Because the fossil fuel oligarchs have so much power. This is another thing we will need to address.
As how who becomes the Democratic nominee? Maybe Vosh would know this. Would that just fall instantly to Kamala Harris or?
Yeah, I guess would have to. I mean, I assume they've been talking about that behind the scenes because it's.
It has to be a subject of discussion with his age.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they. You know, and there's a bunch of people crossing their fingers. Ominous that he can make it across the finish line again. Yeah. Ominous. Yeah, no, it's pretty bad there. Kamala Harris will have an even worse chance against Donald Trump than Biden by a pretty wide margin. And considering
how
bad
things are for Biden. Paul was saying that he thinks that there's not going to be any debates this debate season. He thinks that neither one of these guys is going to want to do a debate, and so they're both going to just find ways out of it. I don't know if Paul's still there. If you wanted to, like,
yeah, no, I'm here. I don't know for absolutely certain that that's what's going to go down, but I have a feeling that specifically Trump's kind of move dodging debates and stuff has set a precedent where it's like. I know for a fact that Joe Biden's handlers are shitting their britches about the idea of Joe Biden having to speak extemporaneously for a f-ing hour and a half. Like that's got to make people break out into cold sweats in the Biden camp. Same goes for Trump. I mean, both of these guys are demented as f-ing, off the rails as f-ing, and I don't know that it's going to do them any favors to engage in the f-ing, kind of American tradition of debate.
Hard to argue with anything he's saying here.
And so I wouldn't be shocked if there just aren't debates this year, you know?
I think there's a decent chance that, yeah. A lot of the, I think right now, I think the person who's shitting their pants more is probably Trump, in large part because he's declined very rapidly in the past. I was totally wrong on this, 100% wrong on this. At the time, I did not know how much Biden's handlers were sheltering him from public scrutiny. I knew it was happening. I think everyone did. I did not realize it had gotten that bad. I was, along with many people, shocked at how incapable he was of speaking in the debate. Yeah, last year or so. I think a lot of it is just the court cases. Like, he has to keep jumping around between different courthouses in different states. Like, he's lost his business license. He's losing money. He's hemorrhaging money.
Man, look at me. Look at me when I thought that Trump was going to be undone by the lawsuits directed against him.
The GOP was giving him money to pay for legal fees, but they've stopped doing that since. Like, the actual coffers of the GOP were open to him for a time, but now that's closed. He has people flipping on him. Like, Rudy Giuliani couldn't even afford a bus ticket home, and he's, like, potentially someone who could flip on Trump. Like, he's under an amount of stress that I legitimately think would probably break most people, and the fact that he, at his age, is even still doing any of this is, if nothing else, indicative of, like, demonic constitution. But I think it is starting to take its toll. I don't even know if he's going to make it all the way. My money would be more on Trump dying than Biden. Because Biden, if nothing,
that might end up being true in the long run. Who knows? How we'll see. You underestimate him. Well, I mean, keep in mind how fucked everything got, man. Like, the DOJ just did not do anything about Trump. It was relegated entirely to state cases. Jack Smith delayed for years on like filing, like, an unbelievable, and then a lot of these cases just went away as soon as he became president, right? It's so bad. It's so bad. But no, you're right. I mean, I, with the benefit of hindsight, or maybe even like at the time, I should have been more pessimistic. Anything else, you know, the presidency is a stressful job, but is it more stressful than what Trump is doing right now? I actually don't know.
What percentage of Americans would think that Trump had been assassinated if he were to die of a heart attack or something? Like,
I don't know, the exact number of people who were going to vote for him, probably, like, literally 100% of prospective Trump voters be like, yep, that was the CIA, 100%. And then we would have, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene pretending to be anti-CIA for a bit, the way she was anti-FBI to cover for Trump. So yeah, I guess that'll be fun. There's not really any easy way through this, right? Like, even the best possible outcome still involves half the country adopting new radical conspiracy theories to explain their loss.
Yeah, but, you know, I am one of the few reasons that I would say that one of the few things I would think of is, like, hey, this is an interesting reason to vote for Biden, which I have, you know, not even clung close to deciding I want to do. But I was thinking about the fact that maybe if the Democrats win enough elections, the far right wingers would be like, it's so rigged, there's no point in even doing it. You know, just totally disenfranchise the right wing. Just like,
so far, this conversation is being pretty fun. We can't look at the entire thing. I wonder, maybe I should skip ahead to, like, a little bit further. Doomerism?
Yes. Yes. Life is the whip. At no point in human history.
Well, I don't ever want to hear that I'm a doomer again.
Now we're mad at each other. Okay. Shoot.
This isn't being a doomer. This is being realistic. There has been no point in human history where people have had the luxury of just choosing the political option that made them happy. For most of human history, like 95% of it, and for a majority of people alive today, they don't get a choice. And for small portion of people historically that have gotten a choice, it's usually a choice between two lesser evils. And by usually, I mean always. We will never have the luxury to not vote for the lesser evil, because electoralism is ultimately about that final say, that final choice.
How about a far lesser evil?
If you sure, for that? Then do the groundwork, the media work, the advocacy to popularize those people.
And stop, well, depends on your democratic system too, because not everyone has the American system.
Bernie Sanders nearly won in the primaries in both.
The underlying argument here is still right. What you're really, the question then becomes one of externality, right? Because I do still believe in the harm reduction argument. It's just about externality. To what extent are you getting potential harm or benefit out of the long-term consequences of a presidency beyond just the harm done during those 4 years, right? You've really ramped up in the liberal hate the last couple of years deservedly. Yeah, well, they've been teeing me a little bit. So I have their, look, we're in this position because the Biden presidency was fucking a disgrace, man. It was all, again, the Gaza shit speaks for itself. You all know how I feel about that. But the unwillingness to do anything about Trump, the DOJ not going after him, and in addition, all of Biden's handlers hiding him from the media so we could all pretend that he was more cogent than he actually was, denying us a president with the bully pulpit, having no ability to influence culture. No wonder everything shifted to the right over Biden's term. Culturally, everything shifted to the right because he was incapable of defending himself, and it's much easier to attack an ineffective opponent than it is to defend an incompetent ally.
2016 and 2020 as a consequence of a lot of work for decades to legitimize progressive perspectives politically. Now,
and he lost as a direct result of the DNC being not everything propped up and allowed to run roughshod over the
will of the voters.
Not everything happens perfectly and right when you want it. The difference between Bernie Sanders being a front runner.
I think we're talking past each other here. I think that so he's correct, right? There are long-term benefits to voting for the lesser evil argument does get sort of undercut a little bit when you factor in the whole, well, what happens if the Dems will do literally anything to avoid putting your guy in charge, even if it means losing? That is really tough to deal with, you know? It's just, unfortunately, like this argument just got contextualized, I think, around the wrong set of candidates, or maybe the wrong time or the wrong place. I don't know. All I know is that right now, and I don't think anyone can argue against this. This to me is like kind of a good defeater because it's really obvious in hindsight. It would have been better if Trump had won in 2020. We would have been spared the disgrace of the Biden presidency and all of the incompetence and abstemiousness and ineffectiveness, the Democrats' complicity for what happened in Israel, his handlers hiding him from the media. We would have been spared all of that. It would have just been a second Trump term, exactly like the first, but even less popular. You know, everyone would have watched him waddle in and would have been like, okay, handle COVID, bucko. You know, everyone would have just, okay, here we are, two terms of this, whatever. And then we probably would have gotten, you know, a more enthusiastic Democratic candidate in 2024. We got the worst timeline of those two potential timelines, for sure, 100%. Then Gavin, and the cycle continues. I don't know. What do you need to do to force the Democrats to not put forward a candidate who will make Republicans popular in the next term? It's not the Clinton years anymore. We're in a new era. We're in a new point in time. Okay, it's not the way that it was 20 or 30 years ago. And this goes beyond just finding a candidate that makes leftists happy. The Republicans are an existential threat to the planet. They are not just a bad party that does bad things. The future of the species, literally, through climate change, global war, debt crisis, whatever, depends on the disempowerment of the ideology that they are currently the main proponents of. They are like the champion cultists of the end times, you know? It is so essential that they not only lose, but lose badly and lose permanently. So it's not just about the Democrats putting forward a candidate that makes me happy. It's about putting forward a candidate that makes them unhappy forever. My hatred of Gavin Newsom is not, at least entirely, based on the fact that I think he's bad. It's because I think he would just do nothing and then be replaced by a terrible Republican in 32. Now you're being hyperbolic? I really don't think that I am, though. I really do think that in many respects, we are running out the clock on serious global issues and that the Republicans have taken almost a maximalist position on harm, unrivaled by basically any government on Earth. You know, the European Union, China, not even Russia have taken in to my opinion, the positions they have with regard to maximal long-term harm. You know, is Vosh doing the Nick Fuentes argument right now? What does that mean? What Nick Fuentes argument? What are you referring to? I also liked the Super Bowl halftime show. Yes, I admit it. I'm not going to get an answer on what about voting the other candidate. You're incoherent. What do you mean about voting the other candidate? I don't know what you mean.
Under contender in the primaries, and what the Democratic Party was like just 20 years before that is massive. The difference that the like people are like, well, he didn't win. Okay, and we're not all rich. We don't have unicorns. You know, Bernie Sanders.
He means advocating for voting across party lines. Is that the Fuentes argument? I didn't realize he had that copyrighted. What the fuck? Me drinking a glass of water. The fucking the Heimlich water. What was the doctor in the Holocaust? Mendel? Mengele? The fucking Mengele drink? I didn't realize he copyrighted that.
It would have been nice if he had won, but the difference between the Clinton years in terms of what was acceptable, what progressive policies could be put forward, what you could say on TV, and 16 years later with Bernie Sanders, remarkable. But when you talk over that, when you say, ah, well, he didn't win, you're stamping on that legacy. Real progress takes work. Thousands of people, broken bodies, blood, effort, sweat, tears, and a lot of suffering.
True, but overstated to a cringy degree. I feel like there's a dialectical tension between these two forces, because I feel like voters typically are more willing to vote for left-leaning candidates when they feel safe, but also
The safety in this case is being created by a strung together web of ineffective Democratic candidates who are actually making us unsafe. I think that, like, if we consider Obama a moderate candidate, which I do, the safety that Obama provided, the perceived safety that Obama provided the American people, I think was specific to that era and no longer can happen. Like, because the argument that I was making back then, and I think that I think I was just wrong here, okay? The argument that I was making was we are more likely to get a Bernie Sanders after voters feel safe and comfy from a candidate like Obama. And the reason for that is because when people feel afraid, they'll vote for strongmen. Voters that are fearful will vote for, like, the moderate centrist unifying ticket candidate like Biden, the person who they think just has the best shot of winning. They don't feel like they have the room to experiment, you know? But I think I was just wrong. The problems are twofold. For one, the safety that Obama provided was not because he was a moderate. It was because it was the pre-Trump era. In a post-Trump era, a moderate like Obama would not be able to survive two terms because people would have been fed up with his ineffectual, disingenuous, progressive bullshit by the end of the first term. Think about it. Imagine Obama's first presidency, but transplant it a decade into the future. All we got for that, so 2 years he did nothing with the Democratic Congress, all we got for this was Medicare for all? Oh, wait, sorry, not Medicare for all, but rather the fucking Obamacare. That's it? The ACA? That's all we got. I think people would be very upset. Look at how much credit Biden got for the infrastructure bill. Nothing. Nobody gave a shit. Nobody on the Democratic ticket can match the energy and the flurry that Trump and the Republicans represent, except for Mamdani, you know, doing it at a local level. But Democrats don't seem to be interested in doing what it would take to get that kind of day-to-day energy moving forward. Now it kind of seems like fear is the default environment anyway. Let me ask you guys, genuine question. Can you imagine at any point in the next 20 years, the Democrats in America just comfortably living day-to-day going to brunch because they think the political situation is chill and they've made it and they've got their guy in power and it's going to be fine? Because I can't. I feel like Obama might have represented the death of the brunch candidate. We didn't get it under Biden, that's for sure. I don't think we're going to get it under Newsom. So maybe the comfort that I was seeking that allowed voters to feel all right with experimenting with a far-left candidate like Bernie Sanders, maybe that comfort just isn't a thing that is on the table anymore, you know? As long as we're in this spiral, we are never again going to have this lull, you know? We're not going to cross through the eye of the storm again. It's always going to be something. I think post-Trump, there will be that delusion for like a year. But we thought we were post-Trump when Biden won. Like, keep in mind, Trump was so disgraced, even Fox News was tearing into him. And there were legal cases mounting. Everyone thought that Trump was going to be torn apart. Corporations were denouncing him. The Republican Party was like throwing their hands up in the air, going like, no, dude, we weren't there. J6, we weren't there. We all thought we were post-Trump. And then there was this slow wave of dread building, where it became clear nothing was going to happen, and then he got prominent again. I remember calling Paul a pussy multiple times because he was trying to call you a Beverly Hills kid or whatever. Okay, to be clear, later on in this debate, this just turns into a bunch of shit-flinging, and I think I zinged Paul better than he zinged me. The whole Beverly Hills kid stuff, I'm sorry, I think, like, past a point, this just turns into, like, active shit-flinging. I wanted to engage with, like, the underlying arguments here. Now he cooked you? Ah, well, you know, what are you gonna do? I wanted to engage with the actual arguments here. Let's review the shit flinging. I gotta go soon. I've been rambling like crazy. You know what? Here. Let's take a look at how this goes. Okay, just to get a feel for the tone later on. Man, I did not do a good job grooming my beard back then.
I'm not 12, bro. All right, I was a tax-paying 9-to-5 worker during both of those presidencies. But you keep saying things are getting so much better. I'm saying while things got better on one hand, they got far worse on another. You seem to want to divorce your tactic from that problem. When the truth, Vosh,
you don't need to divorce two things that were never married.
The truth is, I don't have a hazy memory when it comes to what it was like to live under George W. Bush or Barack Obama. I'm not 12, bro. All right, I was a tax-paying 9-to-5 worker during both of those presidencies. So let's be real about this shit.
Okay? You're literally doing the bit too right now. You're like, well, I wore my blue jeans. You don't know I'm shit, actually, dude.
I remember how it went. Yeah, I know that triggers you young
think
people.
Is wise cynicism. Like, you think you're like, wait, Rick Sanchez? You just don't know shit. You do not know. This is why you keep running back to the same, well, Biden's bad. I know. Great. Tune into my streams. Find out more reasons he's bad. You think you're brave or evocative for pointing out that things have gotten bad.
You need to write a book like
everyone knows this.
How Biden is the worst thing to ever exist and why you should still vote for him. That would be
99% Hitler, buddy. Look, it's fundamentally disqualifying in a conversation about politics for you to pretend that there's an equivocacy between previous and current Republican attitudes towards the dissolution of democracy. This would be like you saying, well, they're both.
That is true. They did play down how bad the Republican Party has gotten in this debate. I'm more trying to engage with like the underlying argument or something, but they did definitely play down. And it is definitely true that they've gotten a lot worse, so much worse.
Both equally,
they've admitted to being wrong on that. Yeah. So I'm not. Yeah, it's not meant to start beef or whatever.
Bad on climate change when one of them doesn't believe in it. Except you did do this, of course. I'm making fun of you. One of them doesn't believe in it, and the other person is just not good enough on it. There's no point in making comparisons. You clearly have a very strong emotional attachment to being a disillusioned doomer, like cynic, for whom nothing will ever be good enough, and that's
as
fine.
Are,
but don't pretend it's politics.
As I am, so you shall be, my friend. I'll be.
Around
open
to like
arms when you
get after freaking out when I called you a kid isn't going to make people forget about the earlier part.
I know that relegating lived experience to some dude with no teeth sitting on his porch going, back in my day, the blacks weren't so uppity or whatever is the easy way to do this. And I also understand it's the easy way to do this to just go like, oh, you're fucking retarded, bro.
You got anyone in hindsight? This could come across as unimaginable cope, but I still don't think I'm that cynical. I still do believe in like, oh my God, it's so nice. Like going out there canvassing and phone banking and like day-to-day engagement, you're going to change people's minds. I think on a process level, I'm still basically where I've always been. And I do believe in those processes because if I didn't, I don't know why I'd be doing what I do. Like I like riffing, you know, but I just don't think I'm that cynical when it comes to like basically my argument isn't there's less value than I thought to these processes. My argument is we have let these processes wilt and die so much that the situation is much more dire than we thought, you know? And I do think there's a meaningful difference there.
Like I could do that too, Voss. I could sit here and call you a yeah, you did. You said I was stupid and simplistic and didn't learn anything from my life.
And
by the way, by my years, politics. my decades of political advocacy, I didn't learn anything. I got no idea how nothing worked. You just think because you lived through a bunch of shit, you got a fuzzy memory about Obama.
Out of curiosity, do you genuinely think that being like, what, 45, 40, whatever, means that you have like some hidden insight into politics that isn't possessed by people who are merely 30? Like, is that like the bar you fall into where you're legitimately doing the like, well, no matter how wrong I am, at least I have slightly worse knees? Like, what are you getting at?
I'm making the position that people, when you live through something, you might have something to speak to that a person that didn't live through something wouldn't. And I think you'd agree with me on pretty much any other subject, except, like, if I was a Hiroshima survivor, you wouldn't be here going like, oh, you think you know more about getting a nuke dropped on you just because you had a nuke dropped on you? You know what I mean?
I would argue with the Hiroshima survivor over whether or not it's good to invest in nuclear energy, I think. I think I would, yeah. I would do that.
I don't think you would disagree. I don't think you would disagree in that instance. But for some reason,
I would happily tell a Hiroshima survivor to their face if they were wrong.
Hold on. I understand that the fact that I've lived through your stated goals and your vaunted bullshit my whole life.
Nothing's changed, really. You know, the fundamentals.
Blue no matter who, some kind of like edgelord bread tube thing that you came up with. I lived it. I was you 20 years ago. I canvassed for John Kerry. I canvassed for Al Gore. I was out there going like, look, dude, I know these guys suck, but we can't handle another George W. Bush presidency. You know what else isn't new? This argument that you're making that the world's about to end if Trump gets elected. Democracy has been over every
okay, well now this is going to look bad on his end
election if we don't vote Democrat since God was a boy, bro. This is not a new this is not a new edge that you're slinging.
You're arguing against the concept of math. You're basically saying, bro, you've been telling me to breathe air my entire life and you seriously like I and it hasn't even fixed my debt. I'm still in debt. Like, what do you like? My student loans haven't gotten paid.
I'm not saying I'm still in debt. I'm saying I'm in worse debt than my parents were.
Yeah, the manager finance is better. Look, I don't know what to tell you. Okay,
you we've rich gotten, fuck.
We've gotten
don't
around
eat
to
a
this.
Dick, manager.
That's the that they would call nowadays. They would call it a cortisol spike. You were such an asshole. We were both being assholes back and forth. There was hardly a one way. Oh my god, it was a good convo. I watched this again after your takes. You were still 90% right. I get look for me. It's always about like what. Okay, what can we learn or what do we do moving forward? I guess I feel like there is a world where it would make sense to argue for a holding pattern. You know what I mean? Where you could be like, okay, Republicans are bad, Democrats are less bad. We're kind of like, you know, we're just trying to coast for a bit. We're working on some social issues. Let's coast, you know, let's keep it going for a bit. You know, Democrats are fine. We'll try to get them to win. You know, that would be in a different world. But that only works if you're really coasting, not if you're like spiraling towards the ground. Maybe, yeah, if you could make that argument at some point in the past. I feel like you could have made that maybe in the post-World War II era up until Reagan, maybe, where like things on a baseline, things were pretty good, and it was mostly kind of managing the downward descent. Manage your finances better was a bad look. No, it was funny as because the analogy was, you're getting mad, you tell me to keep breathing, I've been breathing my whole life, and I'm still in debt. It's a nonsensical comparison. That was my argument. My argument was like, you can't be upset that you have to keep putting in work to something because it hasn't solved an adjacent problem. It doesn't really have anything to do with anyone's actual finances. Continuing to breathe can contribute to fixing your finances or making them worse. Anyway, the Yankee Tanky debate was even better. You people have terrible standards. You could argue it's a bit of a dick move. How? What? Okay, here's the real reason I can't do debates anymore, because you people would be fucking optics frogging me, man. I would be the people who watch me with the adjacency with Destiny's community, they're gone. So now I'm with a new crew. I argue with somebody and I make a joke about their hairline or something, and everyone's gonna yell at me. I feel like a good argument would have been the choose your enemies angle. I'd rather have to deal with weak Dems than bloodthirsty fascists. I agree with that. However, I'm pretty sure I brought it up in this conversation. The problem now is like, what are the long-term consequences for showing that all Dems can be as weak? I think a really good thing to investigate would be like, why is it that progressive sentiment was so popular during Trump won? And then when Biden won, it went down. Public opinion on basically every progressive issue was trickling upward during Trump's first term. Gay rights, trans rights, immigration, whatever. And then Biden took over and they plummeted. And now they're going back up under Trump. What I think what it shows is that negative polarization has a lot to do with how people form their opinions on social issues, which kind of makes me think like the long-term consequences of fronting weak Democrats might be a lot more significant than the short-term effect of them not getting as much done as you think, you know? I have a feeling that if Trump had won two consecutive terms, if he had also been president from 2021 to 2025, I have a feeling that the progressive sentiment would have continued ticking upward. More people would have remained pro-Israel, pro-trans, pro-gay, because all of it would have been seen as a cultural backlash against the two-term unpopular presidency of Trump. Whereas with Biden, like Biden's affiliation with the progressive sentiment, pro-Israel? Did I say pro-Israel? Wait, pro-gay, pro-trans, pro-immigrant? What did I say? What did I replace with pro-Israel? You meant pro-Palestine? I probably meant something else. I will say, though, I do think that the Zionist sentiment in America was made much worse by having Biden as president during October 7th, because if Trump had been president, for one, Trump doesn't give a fuck about Israel. So if Trump had been president, he probably would have like wiffle-waffled on it quite a bit. It would have been hard for Republicans to form a unified front, but the Democrats would have been politically incentivized to push back against Zionism because it would have been affiliated with Trump. They could have done like the whole Netanyahu bit. Like maybe Israel has a right to exist, but Netanyahu is just like Trump. He's also a crazy far-right, da-da-da. Whereas like Biden openly getting along with Netanyahu for years, while Netanyahu like undercut him at every turn, made it look really, this is really bad, man. Really, really bad. So you're saying spacing out his terms was better for us in the long run? No. I was saying that having them together would have been better for us. Spacing out Trump's terms was awful for us. Yeah, but they're not doing anything now. Why would they have done anything back then? I'm talking about public sentiment. I'm talking about public opinion. The question then is, if the public polling would have made the Dems listen to people and put forward a good candidate, well, that ultimately is the real question. Let's say you have the public sentiment issue handled and you're only talking about the candidate. How the do you get the Democratic Party to line up behind a progressive candidate? ignore the people for a second. Let's say the people are largely pro-progressive candidate. Let's say they mostly fall in line along that angle, right? How the fuck do you keep the Democratic Party from rat-fucking the candidate that steps up? That I don't really have an answer to. You can overwhelm them with public support, right? Mamdani. You can Mamdani that shit. You can overwhelm them with an incredibly competent candidate who just nails it from top to bottom. That is possible, but that's tough, man. That is not fair. That's not a fair deal. And even then, you still have to work to undo all the institutions that were aligned against you in the first place. You already burn a lot of political capital getting a progressive in office. Then you're telling me they have to go up against the fossil fuel lobby, the Republican Party, and all the corporate interests that back them that collectively represent trillions of dollars? Jesus Christ, you know? That's really difficult. My main hope, I guess, and I this is like a paleo-Marxist position, but in a material sense, I feel like a lot of these conditions are going to get worse and worse, and they're going to push people towards, we'll say, the more maximalist political approach. Does that make sense? Like, as climate change gets worse and income inequality gets worse, I think that people are going to be more and more, you know, optimistic, or maybe not optimistic about, but like more sold on the idea that aggressive action is what is needed. And my hope is that we don't become like Russia, because unlike Russia, America has a democratic civil society. We have a cultural tradition and a lot of social emphasis placed on the value of rule of law and democracy, which they don't have in Russia. Even Republicans in America abide by this, which is the reason why, even though Republicans are very openly racist, the Republican Party still doesn't say anything open about people's races. There's still a deference to the meritocratic standard of bigotry, I think, that they feel comfortable with, which means there are lines they still can't cross. What prevents the maximalist position from being Nazism? Because nobody wants it. That's all. Because at the end of the day, Nazism did, for a period of time, for a window of time in the 30s, convince people that they had the solutions, and nowadays they don't and they can't. The mainstream Nazi influencers in America are all openly clout chaser wannabe, you know, celebrities. I don't think they have the ability to convince people that they offer a solution. The argument from the Nazis was that the way for national glory was to become a part of the body of the state. Remember, the Nazi position was not just let's be bigots, you know? The undercurrent of Nazism was about total subservience to the national will. Americans don't want that. Even the most hardcore MAGA types don't want that. They like lockstep, part of a machine. America is too culturally individualist, you know? And the democratic civil society, lowercase d democratic, you know, like democracy. I feel like Nazism is just not going to take any real root here. By real root, what I mean is that it's not a threatening political force. I think that religious evangelicism is much more threatening. I think neoliberalism is the like real project that is being worked on still. And that's the thing that's really going to bring things to a head, right? Because how do you keep the world... Man, I saw the recent More Perfect Union video on how Vegas is dying. It's dying in the sense that fewer people are going because nobody can afford to be there anymore. But they're still making tons of money. And the reason they're making tons of money is because of the K-shaped economy. They are catering more and more to the elite, like 2 or 3% of the population that can afford whatever, and everyone else is just left out. How do you keep a society afloat like this? How do you keep cities, states, countries alive when you have like a massive schism in income? There are countries that have that level of visible income inequality, and for the most part, they're very, very, very unstable, like South Africa. South Africa is a perfect example. After the end of apartheid, you have, by and large, white South Africans who have a lot of money, and you have black South Africans who don't. And the friction between those two groups has caused record political instability. Well, not record, I guess, in the whole history of the country, but significant political instability and violence and theft and power grid blackouts. South Africa is like borderline a failed nation right now. It's not quite there, but it's getting there. It's getting quite bad over there. Inequality destroys everything it touches in the long run. Dubai, Bahrain. Yeah, but those countries aren't really... America couldn't become a Dubai, but... I think that's what they want for us. K-shaped economy, can you explain this in a nutshell? Consumer spending in America right now, the top 10% of Americans, income-wise, are spending more and more and more and more and more. And the bottom 90% are spending less. The outcome of this is that the total amount of consumer spending is kind of evens out. So if you look at it in terms of the total population, consumer spending's kind of level, you know? But in reality, most people are spending less because they do not have the money. It's all being held up by the enormous amount of money that's flowed upwards into the top 10%. That's the gist of it. You know? Yeah, inequality breaks the social contract. And my hope, I guess, is that it breaks in a way that allows it to be fixed rather than breaking in a way that just fundamentally breaks society. You're forced to appeal your products to wealthy people. Not just your products, dude. Your cities. Where you, like, everything. Everything everywhere. It's not good.